So you go down this cliff, go left down the cliff, left, and then just tumble for a while, and then you should be there.
When a competent observer looks for signs of despotism in a community, he looks beyond fine words and noble phrases.
It's society. They work for each other. They pay each other. They buy houses. They get married and make children. That just sounds like slavery with extra steps.
Go into the automobile business and compete with the auto trust. Can I go into the grocery business and compete with the chain stores? Not a chance. Monopoly is the menace of free enterprise.
Because it's just a big money-making machine. They're wandering through a maze of inauthentic, fake landscapes, and they can't escape.
The message in all this is that the capitalist system in America is unfair and is, in fact, a failure at providing for basic human needs or maintaining continued national growth.
I can't wait for, like, the episode of, like, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, where all the contestants, like, team up and they overpower the hosts and they share the money.
Bottom-up horizontal connection is sharing at all levels, not top-down control.
We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Because as communities go, so goes the nation.
All right. Thank you for coming back to the Three Left Show. I'm your host, Dan Platt, activist know-it-all, talking about leftist activism, practice, theory, and what's it, everything, jibber-jabbering about politics of the day, making the unpolitical political and the political more grounded. This next hour, I'll be talking about electoralism. It's kind of the way most people talk about politics. Who's in charge? I don't like who's in charge. I don't think maybe you do either. If you do, maybe I can help change your opinions, even though slightly, with new evidence, if you are the rational type. I think we all like to think of ourselves as such. So, let's see. Okay, first, as I have wanted to do at least once a month, cover the New York governor's race. Last time, let's see, I think, did I even cover the primary? Probably. But let's see, the progressive champion Nixon went down with the same, if not slightly less of a outcome than Zephyr Teachout. This could be because there's more voter suppression, other more spending against them, against Cynthia Nixon. Many factors, but otherwise, the fact that in 4 years, the progressive Dem enter, we're going to take over the Democratic Party movement and all this new energy from the 2016 elections, anti-Trump and all that, the resistance, couldn't get more votes, at least it was the same, got the same result as 4 years ago. It's quite depressing if that's your strategy. Reaffirming, if you're someone like me who's always been an advocate of working outside of the major parties and the usual strategies of electoralism. Because that's the thing. I'll talk about electoralism, but only because I feel like if we were organizing outside of it, all those no-party people actually joined a third party, even if it's not 100% them. You know, take that. There are these quizzes online of, like, what party should you really belong to? And it'll give you different percentages. And usually those that take them, you know, say 80% Green Party or 70% Libertarian Party. It's like, well, you know what? I don't always like their candidates. I don't always like everything they're talking about. But as far as putting my voice, my vote towards a actual concrete thing, because if you're not, then you have to, if you're an independent, trying to get an independent ballot line, run as an independent or something like a socialist, because the Socialist Party doesn't have a ballot line, then you kind of end up in situations where you have to, the goalposts can be moved. There's all these hoops to jump through. It's hard to do it on your own, even when you have all these other independents funding and helping. There's still a necessity, legal or otherwise, of being in a party. It just makes it easier. And here's an example. Socialist for U.S. Senate barred from the ballot. You get barred from the ballot usually when you try to run as an independent, unless you actually are rich and you can buy your way on. which I think pretty much happened in you know, you can sue to get on the ballot, and you have the resources to buy the lawyers to sue your way on the ballot, even if you don't have all the signatures. This is something that a candidate in the congressional district south of us, New York, 19, did. So a blatant display of anti-democratic maneuvers by the state of Connecticut. So this is happening in Connecticut. Socialist candidate Fred Litch has been denied application for ballot status after collecting 11,000 support and signatures. Now, what kind of my general gripe underlying this article, I'm going to read most of it, it's pretty short, all of it, is that the Greens have a ballot line in Connecticut. Yet this socialist has decided to run, I'm assuming, it doesn't say so actually, but I assume that he is trying to create a socialist ballot line. Something that can be done, but is much harder. You basically have to collect 5 times as many signatures. Let's see. Because the difference is, if it's an independent ballot line, you have to collect 5% of all registered voters. If it's for a party's ballot line, you need to collect signatures from 5% of registered in that party. Right? So that really, that is quite a different number. With 56 nominating petitions still not returned by town clerks and numerous glaring errors, I just reference this story. It's very short. It's basically the town clerks dragged their feet, didn't return all the petitions to the state secretary of state that oversees these things. There were corrections, and the campaign itself reviewed, as one should do, 20% of signatures that are seen as. Basically, the state says these are illegitimate signatures, and then you check 20% to check their work, and they found that actually corrections made to the most obvious violations to Hartford, New Haven, brought Litch within 670 signatures of meeting the 7,500 needed for ballot status. Similar violations in Pridsport have still not been corrected. We have checked the sample of signatures rejected for belonging to unregistered voters against voter rolls and found that 20% do in fact belong to registered voters. At that rate, we should be able to find enough signatures in the remaining 4,000 that were rejected to obtain ballot status, probably even within the 57 missing petitions. We think voters would be shocked to learn how poorly their democratic rights are treated. Registers of voters and town clerks have openly admitted to not knowing basic rules, to putting unqualified people in charge of verifying signatures, and to running only partial searches on voter names because full searches take longer. So incompetence, laziness, and general bias towards not caring enough about independent candidates. If you're in a party and that party can employ lawyers on staff or has lawyer friends, because it's organized and enough of your membership are lawyers and they know what they're doing, and to have people who are experienced in the process, so you never go in not knowing all of the potential problems you'll face like this, that you do everything right, you can do everything right and still be blocked and they'll still make mistakes. It could just be human error, but that's exactly the point, that this human error, it's one point, that this human error prevents democracy from happening. Can we have a system that's human error proof, that is not restricted or from people's obvious biases? You know, the very fact that our election system is controlled by one Republican and one Democrat, right? And at least in our county and in any county in New York, is telling that if you're not in one of these parties, and that means like, well, you have to be in one of these parties. That's the only way to make change. It's very defeatist to say that we have to play their game because it's their game. I prefer not to. And so is anyone who's registered Green or independent even. I mean, after all, here's another example of Dem enter either being roadblocked or just to me, the futility of it. All right. They see this as, you know, they're making headway, and especially when like a few of their candidates will win, like Gilliam and Ocasio-Cortez, like that says their strategy is working. I'm less enthusiastic. And I'll talk about why with other stories this hour. But here's the rest of this 5 minutes here, where in Brooklyn, where the DSA is probably at its strongest, Democratic Socialists of America, Democrats turned up in record numbers, but one man held all the power. So this is referring to a Democratic committee meeting. One strategy of a part of Den Enter is not just to run candidates in primaries, but to take over the committees, the Democratic Party committees in various areas, county by county, flood them with this new energy from Bernie-crats, and they take over these committees, and the committees are the ones that endorse the candidates. So, and they also have they're also the people who are appointing who is control of the election system. So if you do that, then maybe you can make the election system fair to progressive Democrats and so on. There's got to be a lot of resistance to that. And in fact, since they're in control of it, they'll do everything possible to prevent that from happening. A former Democratic state senator banged the gavel to start the meeting as a man in a packed auditorium yelled, "We're going to take power from you." Seems kind of impotent, though. If they're going to, they would remove him from the room and then hold the meeting without him. But because there's still respect for the rules and doing things the right way, they're not going to remove this man who's basically preventing them because he has a gavel. Cheers may have rode out, setting the tone for Thursday's chaotic meeting for the Kings County Democratic Committee, where newly elected members, backed by insurgent progressive groups, sought to exert control during the group's first gathering since the September primary. Because this is when a lot of them were elected. But in the end, every vote and every decision came down to one man, Frank Sodero, the Democratic leader in Brooklyn. This was mainly possible because of a proxy system that is targeted for reform and allows committee members to fill out proxy cards before meeting, ceding their votes to other members. So despite the record attendance of nearly 500 people in a year that has seen stunning upsets like Democrat AOC, and the Democratic machine was able to maintain its ironclad grasp on the committee. "We have a Democratic Party that's disconnected from what its people want," says Shannon Stagman, a newly elected member from Park Slope. "The role of Democratic County Committee, the lowest rung of the party governance in the state, is to choose local judicial candidates and the Democratic nominee in special elections, but it also plays a role in crafting." On Thursday, as Renegade Committee members booed and chanted shame, another kind of impotent kind of protest to me, buoyed by more than 500 proxy votes. Oh, because Sodero's slate of committee leaders and his judicial nominees, again, the choosing who's on the courts, who's interpreting the law and enforcing the law and deciding what laws are going to be enforced. Not a legalist here. I'm not a legalist. I'm not very respectful of this approach. It's fine if you're in power and the law benefits you, but if it doesn't, because that's why we don't have those solar arrays being put in every neighborhood. I mean, if we could cobble together 60 grand, you know, 10 grand, I mean, that's the cost of this station. We could install neighborhood solar panels, but there are ordinances against it. You have to have the land. And a lot of the land, even the vacant land, is you have to go through this dumb process of proving that you're responsible and that you have everything in order to do it. You have to be the right kind of owner, and that means a profit-seeking owner of some kind. They really want people to make money and thus generate income to pay property taxes. That's what it all comes down to, rather than just having a progressive tax system. There have been a pattern since the New King Democrats started 10 years ago. The county tried, God, 10 years ago that they've been doing this stuff. The new Democrats. So this is Dem Enter at its finest. So they elect a bunch of people, and they're still like stuck by procedure. There's obviously a lot of layers to this stuff, but I mean, at the heart of it, you got people power, but the machine will find a way, and you just have to smash it at some point. You have to decide, when are you not going to put up with this goddamn procedure and letting rules get in the way of helping people? Anarchists don't. We say we're going to do it, legal or illegal. Or, at the very least, we'll try to break as few laws as possible. Especially if it's a matter of not hurting anyone. You know, squatting hurts no one. Unless maybe you see it as, well, you're not paying property taxes, you're not paying your fair share, and that negatively affects me. But that's taking into account the well-intentioned meanings of municipal government, that they are going to spend taxes responsibly, that they're going to prioritize local needs, which here in Albany they do not. If they do, it's they're exceptions, you know, it's done with the support of community leaders that at times to me appear to be captured. It's called it's called capture when one faction or agency of sorts has more influence over another. Community groups are supposed to control the government, but the government seems to have more weight in what community groups do, have more of a say. This is especially if, like, say, you get money from a government agency, and then you have to follow the rules of being a nonprofit. You can't be overtly political, endorse candidates, organizing for something else. You pretty much like, oh, we'll lose our funding or lose the pull we have with our government officials now. You know, they won't want to work with us anymore. You know, to me, it's like, well, so what? You know, what do you really get by propping up what is at its heart illegitimate, where all these people are elected with minorities of the citizenry, minorities of minorities. And then even when it comes to representation, the needs of profit making and maximizing the city's income will come first. Because that's what everything seems to come down to, even when it's becoming, you know, you get state grants for projects that maximize income or profit and not community benefit. Because a lot of things that help people are, in fact, revenue neutral. And the city balks at these things. There's a lot of things that could be done that could be revenue neutral, and they don't do it. Like, for example, repossessing homes that aren't explicitly owned and giving people a loan to fix it up and live there and so on. You know, it could be people with no income. But at the very least, you know, if it's a matter of protecting these homes from theft and, of course, making the neighborhoods nicer for everyone there. And that's what's usually left out, that people complain about and the danger of these vacant buildings, but then they don't want someone living there that isn't quote-unquote paying their fair share, where they are. It's just in the non-tangible, non-dollar way. As many people are helped by that anarchist squad I was talking about before. So I'm going to move on. And try to keep things interesting. I'm going to stay in Brooklyn, actually, with talking electoralism, since that's where the action seems to be. It's definitely not up here in Albany. We have, for congressional races, we have Greens, both to the north and south of us, running in those races. But they aren't getting a lot of talk in the progressive circles. There's a lot of ignoring of the spoiler. Oh, that's right. I didn't even talk about how what really got me going on wanting to cover all this stuff is the bad strategies of a fellow progressives, the liberal left. The Working Family Party here in New York just endorsed Cuomo. I actually wasn't sure if they were going to follow through with this because it had been a while. If they were going to do it, I would figure they'd do it the week after the primary, and it's been 3 weeks now. But they finally did it. I guess they were heading up against the deadline. The pressure was on. They kicked Nixon off their line. loser. and they put Como on because the only reason is that they feel that enough progressive votes on their line, the idea is to keep their ballot line. But at this point, they have to ask themselves what it's really worth to have this line. How many candidates are they? I mean, they're endorsing candidates, but how many of these progressive Democrats are actually agents of change in the long run? It's so incremental, and I've probably explained in the last episode, there's different kinds of incrementalism. There's incrementalism where the goals are lofty, like socialist revolution. And then there are the goals where it's like, well, we just want to reform. You know, it's a kind of incrementalism where the first stage, the next 5 years of reforms are all just within the Democratic Party itself. And then once we get all those reforms, then we can finally lower rents and have more public housing and all the things that the Greens were talking about right now. We don't need to reform the Democratic Party. We can just elect ourselves and build a alternative organization and do it now. And it's like, isn't that simpler? But it's like, oh, well, you can't do that because you're going to be blocked in every way and we just don't have the money. I'm going to give a monthly Facebook rant. I'm going to quote a Facebook rant here. Addressing just that. But first, a story from Louis Protek, blog called The Unrepentant Marxist. So this is an old lefty from the 60s, DSA guy. Or rather, he just became a DSA member, amounting to making a $5 contribution and nothing else. My main interest was being apprised of their goings-on. So this is from his September 15th article. So this is, I guess, right after the primary. The DSA, Julius Salazar, and the Future of the Left. Let's see now. Main interest was being apprised. My $5 was worth it since I get emails from Maria Svart, their elected leader, and a subscription to their membership forum. In a Facebook conversation with longtime Marxist Democratic Party activist Carl Davidson, so these are hard leftists who work within the Democratic Party because they've accepted that it's the only game they can play to get anything. I'm not sure what they're getting. I ask them, and they usually explain, and it's always the small potatoes. It's like, well, that's the kind of help and reform that will be meaningless in 4 years. That's the way I see it. Like a fight for more rent control or something. And it's like, well, you know, in 5 years' time, that will be rendered meaningless, or like a new problem will be created because we didn't solve the intrinsic problem about housing. And market and how it's market-based. Carl showed me that I wasn't a member. Well, just a couple days ago, I got in the snail mail, and he got a little card calling that says he's an organizer on it. Let's see now. Obviously, not all, since they were largely... So it's talking about, like, you know, they have this new membership, spiked membership of like 30 grand, 30,000 people. Obviously, not all, since they were largely responsible for ringing the doorbells and helping get Julia Salazar. So Julia Salazar was a candidate for state senate. She's one of the people that are ousting the independent Democrats. These are Democrats that can caucus with the Republicans or voted their way, or at least were a roadblock to passing things in our Senate and having a Democratic majority. Now, usually what's mentioned is when we do have a Democratic majority in the New York State Senate, they usually don't pass anything progressive anyway. I think the thing that's different now is that we have more progressives being elected to the state senate, just enough or not enough. It's usually the latter category, not enough. To her comrades, she was a working class immigrant and Sephardic Jew from Colombia who was radicalized by her experience working as a domestic and by the treatment of Palestinians. The creeps at Tablet magazine looked into her background and discovered that she came from, in fact, a wealthy family with no Jews in the past and enjoys a $685,000 trust fund from her deceased father. Also, she had a right-wing past that included defending Israel on Glenn Beck's talk show. I suppose DSA has accepted all that, like in the final scene of Some Like It Hot, where Jack Lemmon pulls off his wig and confesses to Joey Brown we can't get married because I'm a man. Whereupon Brown answers, well, nobody's perfect. Except that she has made a legitimate political and religious conversion, even though some cynics might have concluded that being self-identified as a Jew and a leftist is a good way to get elected in New York. My only question is when she did not disclose her past to her comrades, unless, of course, that would have triggered suspicions that they were dealing with an opportunist. That is most people, to me, who run in Democratic primaries and seem to get some traction. They're usually some kind of opportunist who actually does have more capitalist support than worker support. They just happen to have worker support from what Greens and other radicals call sheepdogging. Over on Jacobin, there's an article by DSA member and trade union steward Ben Beckett, deliberately titled, We're on a Winning Streak, that offers up-to-date thinking among young Marxist Democratic Party activists who will become the next generation's Carl Davidson. Showing a bit of buyer's remorse, Beckett explained Nixon's loss to Como as a result of her lack of interest in working class issues. Of course, in the unlikely event that she had bested Como, I am sure that Jacobin and the DSA would have been basking in her glory. That's how the kind of politics based on pragmatism works. I want to let that paragraph sit because that's probably the only reason I'm actually reading through this. Is that when your politics are based on pragmatism, when you lose, it's because they weren't, you know, strong enough in this way. And when they win, they are strong because of those exact same reasons. Beckett drew attention to the bourgeois presses putting her past under a microscope, something that does not commonly take place when a candidate is running for a relatively minor post, like state senate. Still talking about Salazar here. This could have only meant that the real estate industry was out to get her. That undoubtedly was true, but it was also true that the Democratic Socialists had been getting more press than their marriage of Prince Henry and Meghan Markle. So what else would you expect? It sells newspapers and is clickbait supremo. Finally, Beckett gets down. So remember, Beckett's a Jacobin author here. Gets down to the brass tacks and deals with the questions of dinosaurs like me blasting the DSA for its Democratic Party orientation. Well, not me exactly. More like the ISO, another socialist independent organization, who have benefited from exposure in Jacobin, even if they help give it its credibility, at least on the left. Here's Beckett's excuse for supporting the Democratic Party. However, any prospects of forming a working-class party in the future will also fail if the party cannot gain the support of a large number of people who currently identify as Democrats. By working in the Democratic primaries now, socialists can sharpen the contradiction between voters and party heads and help accelerate the process by which founding an independent party will become feasible. So I'm going to stop reading from this now and go into a short rant on first. I'm going to talk via Facebook rant that you're ignoring all the people who are not currently registered to vote, who are in fact the under and working class. And then there are all the people that don't vote regularly because the Democrats are such shite. Because there's usually no one, even in both, even when you have this progressive Dem, you're expected to go to the, what are called the prime voters, the people who vote the most, you know, or you go to every registered Democrat. But how many independently minded, left-leaning people are even left in the Democratic Party? You have all these people, not all these people, but there's the group that want to take over the Democratic Party and want to affect it, who join the Dems and stay Dems. But they are, in my community and others, the minority of residents. The minority, right? But because they're the active ones, they're the only ones that seem to exist as political participants. Everyone else isn't interested. Well, there are reasons for that. Why don't you ask them why they're not interested? I have, and their answers usually fall along the lines of, system isn't trustworthy. It doesn't offer legitimate results even when you do win. And anyone who does run usually, you know, and wins, doesn't follow through because then they have to play ball and play nice with all the other status quo people to get, quote unquote, get anything done. because that's what I hear. Because that's why Ocasio-Cortez can talk about democratic socialism on late-night talk shows. But then she walks back half of the platform that made her a champion of progressivism. And as a congressman, I expect she'll be milquetoast. A word that I suppose some dictionaries don't even say. So I'll link to that and I'll link to all articles on the website. I haven't been able to put it in the show notes, or rather the description in iTunes. I'm sorry for that. So I'm going to try to make sure that links and stuff are on the website, and then there'll be a link to that on the website in the description. All right, back in the last section of the Three Left Show, Radical Left-Wing Talk Radio, here at Grand Street Community Arts, WCAA The Voice. I have a voice in Albany. I think you heard that at the beginning of the 2 hours. So as we're approaching the end of the show, so I'm going to wrap up this talk of electoralism and the viability of third-party politics, and just generally what is good strategy and what isn't. You know, I'm not like the best person making these, maybe I'm all over the place with my arguments here, but that's why I'm going to do my Facebook rant of the month, or in so many weeks, where this is from our Green Party congressional candidate south of us in Congressional District 19. He is from New Paltz, where we had a green mayor, and it was that green mayor that actually started the gay marriage issue by actually, again, breaking the law and officiating gay marriages as the mayor and making them legal as far as New Paltz was concerned. And that started the whole fight. It takes someone bold doing something, breaking the rules of the conventional wisdom. And I think Greenfield, being someone who has held office as a Green, has helped get other Greens elected in the New Paltz area, volunteer firefighter. He points out that like climate change is here, and I'm the one protecting you from the wildfires that are happening here in their area. So I'm going to read, and he's going to make an argument, and just leave you with that. The United States citizenry is not center-right. All we know is that about 30% of the 50% who vote, minority of minority, are in the spectrum of center-left to center-right, with the other 70% preferring distances further from the center and holding their noses in the ballot booth. That the media and major party political spokespeople continue to validate and encourage the interpretation that Americans are resolutely center-right is why the other 50% don't vote at all, and why nothing the media and major parties say can change that decade after decade after decade. What is most horrifying about this endlessly reinforced false presumption is that the Republicans have about as many center-right candidates as the Democrats have progressives. Hardly any. The Republican Party is extreme right, and the Democrats are center right in the classic Nixonian sense. There is practically nobody for whom anyone who is even merely center left can vote without holding their noses, let alone viable choices for the moderate left or beyond. Nor is there anyone for people who don't define themselves as left, right, or anything else, and view issues one at a time, and not through a lens of some generally intended pattern. No choices, zero. That's because viability is measured in the millions of dollars for Congress, the scores of millions for senators and governors, and the hundreds of millions to billions for presidents. And that mind-boggling scale of dollars is only invested in people who are center to far right, because those are the people who will provide guaranteed returns on that investment. Our campaign finance system is the gatekeeper to bar entry to all who do not conform to right-of-center politics. Because of that, we're approaching the bottom of the death spiral of democracy. Keep voting as you always have, and you'll keep getting what you've always gotten. There are 43 million Americans below the federal poverty line and another 50 million just above it. And that second group should be thought of as below it, since that's where we find most of the people who still don't have health insurance. We are at war in several countries, uninterrupted for 17 years, with nothing but escalation proposed by both major parties. And $1.5 trillion this year, in this year's federal budget, going to that. That's why some Americans, and only a few senators vote against that, by the way. That's why some Americans have the kind of financial surplus that makes the annual investment of billions of dollars into elections possible. It comes from the poor, the sick, and the slaughtered. Systematic theft of workers, I add that. Nobody is forcing you to vote for this. It's learned helplessness. And that's why that paragraph from the DSA article with the Jacobin writer, he talks like out of a place of helplessness, that like we have to work for the Democrats. We need people who identify as Democrats to be on our side if we're going to make any headway. To me, or you could just organize the rest of people. All right. And in my experience as well, sometimes there's a feeling that they're unorganizable because maybe they'll all have that super idealistic mindset of I'm on my own and we're all on our own and there's no point in working together. It's not going to work. You know, we all have to agree all the time and that's not going to happen. Well, no, we don't have to agree all the time. A particular concept that I'm in love with right now is the difference between the strategic unity versus ideological unity. The unity of agreeing about everything and having a line, and any group that has that stays small and isn't really good at recruiting. And there are many leftist groups like that, and that's why they stay small. And then there's the strategic unity of having, you know, just for basic needs, for what we need, for what we want to do right now, policy-wise, and be united about that, right? Forced helplessness, learned helplessnesses. You can turn off the TV, the Times, and the Washington Post websites and vote any way you want. That will make something else viable and make what exists now non-viable and end the madness. Now, this is just in the context of voting and elections, but and elections are part of our society, like it or not. Maybe I shouldn't use that phrase, like it or not. Most of us don't like it. I am not a fan. That's the thing. Like, you know, for the issue-to-issue voters, we should just have, like, government by referendum. And then everyone who's in office is just the people who make the referendums happen. And they have to do that or else they're fired. You know, it's not up to the election deciding if they're fired or not. It's did the referendum pass? But there are problems with government by referendum, especially on a large scale. But again, a lot of those problems, at least in my eye, come from the fact that our elections are fueled and determined by money and the people who hold money and their interests, right? It's not that they're all evil. Their intentions, at least for themselves, are good. They're a class, and they're going to do what's interested, their interest in their class, their group, their club. And we need our own clubs and determine what our interests are. You know, are we just workers? Are we precarious workers? Maybe we're not workers at all, and we're the unemployed. The unemployed should have a union that can then work with the employed union, unions of employed people. That way, when a strike has to come, there are no scabs, right? Everyone's in a club, anyone's in a union who can, and then those unions can actually work together and have councils. And I'm circling back around to, you know, then when the government collapses or can't do its job anymore, or do what it does because of disaster, because of climate change, or because of the way revenue just can't be collected properly anymore. That's when we as people can actually institute people power. Because to me, marching in a cohort to influence elected people isn't people power to me. People power is the ability to barricade yourself in the room keep your opponents out and their forces and their forces of coercion, and do what you need to do, whether it be run a party committee meeting, and then also have your allies in charge of enforcing what the committee decides, or unless it's the same group, and so on and so on. Being more militant, breaking the rules, being confrontational. Okay, maybe you don't have to break any laws. That's a scary thing for people. It's risky. That's granted. But be confrontational, right? You can be confrontational and not break any laws. You know, going to the men's bathroom to chase down the senator who's going to appoint someone who's going to kill Roe v. Wade. That's confrontational. And you have to break some kind of rule. And that is a muscle we all have to exert, the rule-breaking muscle. Now, anyone who jaywalks is exercising that muscle every day. So walk more and jaywalk and figure out that it's just a waste of your time to just go to the every crosswalk for the convenience of the drivers and their ability to go 40 miles per hour in a city. So I'm going to wrap up the show. Let's do the housekeeping. Housekeeping, just to remind you that this show is podcast and is available on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and any podcast application that is usually connected to the iTunes store. This show can be found that way, downloaded, listened to, etc., on your phone, on your computer. The website is threelefts.news. That is where I keep an archive of all episodes. On iTunes, it usually just shows the last 10. And is there, I will put in the effort to list all my sources there. Let's see. Yeah, so Vote Green Party, or Make Some Trouble, however you can. Meet, talk to like-minded, complain, don't keep problems to yourself. You might find there are more people who want to work with you about this stuff and fight and get what you need than those that will just say you're the problem. So it all starts with putting yourself out there. So, and I'm doing that. Every day, and especially now. So I'm going to play some music to finish out the hour. My voice is gone.
Mind in your life is a
Yeah.